I've gotten some nice responses.
Okay, well, that'll be the last word. Thank you so much, Norm, for being on my show. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Paul.
And that's it for Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned for more great programming here on KBOO. Bye, everybody.
Living in the wasteland of the free, we got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines, and their speech is growing increasingly unkind.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey KBOO listeners, KBOO cut through the clouds during our end-of-year campaign thanks to support from listeners like you. When we meet our campaign goals, we can continue to bring you colorful, radiant rays of radio. Thank you, and keep tuning in for unique music, cutting-edge news, and transformative public affairs on the airwaves.
KBOO.
Hi, this is Grace Greg Medicin, and I am a broadcaster for KBOO Radio. Today, we are doing part two with Marianne Stupel Wallace, who is a English second language educator. And today's subject is race unity. Reasons to work for race unity and nine ways to work for race unity. Marianne is a educator. She's a teacher, educator. Again, English is second language. And I'd like to start with a sentence out of Nine Ways to Work for Race Unity. Education is the principle of the oneness of humanity and is the shortest route out of poverty and prejudice. And it's a very important way to help people that are experiencing. Anyway, what is race? What is prejudice of race? And hi, Marianne.
Hi. Hi, Grace.
This is our second interview. We did The Promise of World Peace last month.
Yep.
And today we thought we'd do part two because you work with immigrants and you did an encore conference in New Orleans. And so you are an expert on race unity. And so we talk about this on a regular basis. So what's the reason for prejudice? Prejudice is ridiculous. What's going on with all that?
You know, I think it's a complicated issue, but one of the first words that comes to my mind is ignorance. Just people not knowing. And also sometimes with ignorance comes like there's fear. Sometimes people are afraid of what they don't know. And I know I think I talked about this last time, and it's a quote that we often say, and it's, again, not just a catchy quote, it really means a lot, that if you think education is expensive, try the cost of ignorance. And I feel like that's really at the heart of racism, of people being prejudiced, deciding that this group of people is X, Y, Z, is simply because they don't know. Maybe they're afraid of what they don't know. The other thing I want to say, and I don't mean this as shooting myself in the foot, I feel like I am pretty advanced in my studies of anti-racism and how to ways that we can end racism, but I feel like I'm always learning, which brings me to the NCORE. NCORE stands for National Conference on Race and Ethnicity in Higher Education. And I've had the privilege to go two times. I went once when it was in Portland in 2022, and most recently in New Orleans, Louisiana, the spring of 2023. It's always in this late spring. So this was in like late May, early June. And it is an amazing conference of educators looking at how we as teachers, educators, academic professionals can do better to be an inclusive place so that students of any walk of life can pursue their education and pursue their goals. And looking at how we can be more welcoming, how we can, if there are racial tensions going on, you know, like thinking about the current news about how there's been like attacks on Muslims or attacks on Jewish people at campuses. And this is where the training that we get at this conference helps us with how can we address these issues so that we can promote unity. And it seems like such a long road, right? From this complete disunity to how do we learn to work together and learn about each other instead of being afraid of each other?
Yeah, and you know, I'm quoting out of a book that was published in England, actually. It's a Baha'i book. It's a Baha'i publication, The Vision of Race Unity. But it talks about America's most challenging issue. And racism is the most challenging issue confronting America. To ignore the problem is to expose the country, and I must say the world, to physical, moral, and spiritual danger. So it's not just getting together and going, oh, let's start becoming one with each other and loving each other. It's physical, moral, and physical. It's dangerous to be prejudiced and have racism anywhere in the world. But it's particularly prominent here in America.
And it's interesting, ignoring. I feel like that's what we've been doing. You know, when people say, well, you know, we had Martin Luther King who had a dream and that was great. Several things about that. We're still, I mean, sure, it's better, but I'm going to add the but. But we have a lot of work to do. And the other thing, too, I want to say is Martin Luther King wasn't the only one, right? There were many people working with him trying to, you know, bring this issue to light. And more recently, Black Lives Matter, right? The reason why we have these kind of movements is because we keep ignoring the problem. We keep thinking erroneously that, oh, if we ignore this, it'll go away. But yeah. Just like that quote says, no, it's right there. It's bringing us into danger. I mean, people are talking about civil war in the United States. So we already kind of have it going on in a way where people, you know, like people that are against the word like woke, for example, or people that are against studying anti-racism. And this is really, as you said, this is destabilizing this country, and it is destabilizing the world. So yeah, I feel like we have to stop ignoring it. I know I've said this a lot of times, but it's very much like somebody who has a problem that they don't want to admit. But we need to look at the problem and go, wait, the only way through this, the only way to get, we can't get around it, we can't get over it, we have to go through this uncomfortable process of undoing all of those, the programming that we've had about certain groups of people, whether it's Black people or Mexicans or you name the group, whatever group of people that everybody...
Americans and Asians and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's just we need to actually look at it and work together, because you're right, we're not going to just be kumbaya and let's just be all in unity. I mean, it's a process. It's almost like I compare it to grieving. When you grieve the loss of a loved one, you can't just hope to get around it, and you can't just hope that it's going to be an easy process. You have to go through it, and you have to accept you're going to be a different person. You're going to be a different person than you were, because that's part of the growing and changing. And I feel like that's, yeah, we have to stop ignoring it. It's, that's well, what you know.
Especially people that are, that don't think they are racist. I mean, we are the least raced, you know. I could honestly say this, and I know it's true for you, I literally have no prejudice against, well, I'm Native American, so that helps, but I have prejudice towards racism hurts everyone. It's not just an occasional race riot or hate crime like the ones that we're very familiar with here in this country. And then since Martin Luther King is coming up this Monday, this is pretty appropriate.
That's what I thought about it. It was because, you know, that's what is coming up. And that's the thing I think that you talk about. It's not like it's just these isolated incidents, right? Like people sometimes go, oh, suddenly, you know, like I remember during the time when Barack Obama was in office, oh, suddenly we're caring about racism, or, you know, we're bringing up the race issues. Like, there's always been a race issue in this country. When you have a country that was founded on the genocide, colonizing, and trying, you know, removing a group of people who were already here first, referring to the indigenous people, and then people that were kidnapped from the continent of Africa, from many different African countries. When you have a country that's founded on that and hasn't quite reconciled or faced their ugly past, it keeps coming up and biting them, right? That's, you know, and that's why this uncomfortable conversation has to happen if we're going to see progress.
Well, it's a way at human potential from all sides, and it produces all levels of violence and aggression in our country and again in the world. It increases stress, depression, domestic violence, drug abuse, and a host of other social and spiritual ills. And so again, promoting through education, both yours, Marianne, and others, because ignorance and blind imitations are the root causes of prejudice. Talk more about your experience with Encore and also your work with immigrants, because again, you have quite a vast hands-on experience about.
I have.
It, you know, people say, oh, I'm not racist. I'm not racist.
But you know, the other thing that's really interesting, I'm pretty sure this was Angela Davis who said this quote, that it's not enough to be not racist. You have to be anti-racist.
Mm-hmm.
I like that because it's an action. There's more of an action in that, like anti-racist, because we all might have that programming where we have a thought where we might say something that's really reveals. Like I can give an example. I've told you this story before, but people, you know, that were broadcasting, you may have not heard the story. But I remember when I was talking with one of my colleagues with Adelante Mejeres, that program I've talked about last time. She was a woman from Colombia, and it was during the International Women's Day in March. And we were talking about some of the struggles of women. And I said, yeah, you and I were in the same boat, sister. She stopped me. She goes, no, I have to stop you. I'm a brown-skinned Colombian woman. My second language is English. Yes, we are both women, but I deal with a whole other layer in addition to the sexism. I get to go back to your country. People can see that I have brown skin, or where are you from? Yeah, we're not in the same boat. Mm-hmm. So what I've learned with that is, that's an example of, okay, oops, I made a mistake. But how I reacted. Mm-hmm. At first I was feeling a little, I didn't share this, but inside I was feeling a little defensive, like, oh, but wait. But then I thought about it and I said, you're right. I apologize. I was not thinking through. I will do better next time. That's an example of being anti-racist, where you can see within yourself, oh, that wasn't the right way. So it's, you know, it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, we have to stop worrying about being perfect. It's not going to be perfect. We're going to stumble, and then we have to get back up and brush ourselves off. And I think a lot of this things that I'm sharing is because I learned this from amazing people at those NCOR conferences that I attended. I mean, some of it was my own. I mean, I've done my own work and reading about anti-racism and working with the students that I work with. But NCOR, the NCOR conference, could you ask me to say a little more about it? There was just a lot of different sessions that you could attend to work on. And one of, like, I remember one of them was about apologizing, like looking at how you apologize, right? Because there's terrible ways to apologize. Like, I can't be racist. I have Black friends. That's a terrible apology. But a good apology, it's really hard to apologize well, but that was, but a good apology is acknowledging that you hurt somebody's feelings without defensiveness, decentering yourself, not saying, but I, it's more of, oh, well, that comment really hurt you, that my intention was not that, but my impact hurt you. And it's kind of like decentering. So it's not about getting defensive, but saying, I will do better going forward. That's an example of one of the very useful sessions that I went to, really practical things that you can do to move forward, right?
Well, and as far as what I'm hearing is, it's important to become sensitive to the different forms of prejudice and oppression that we all may experience from a different perspective, like sexism, ageism.
Yes.
Apply what we learn to our own racial attitudes and change that. Yeah. I know when you came back from Encore, it was a year ago or a couple years ago?
It was actually just a few months ago. I'm terrible at math. I went the end of May.
Right, last year.
It started like the end of May, beginning of June. So I guess that would have been, what, 7 months, 8 months ago?
Last year.
last year. Yeah, not quite a year ago, but.
2024, isn't it already?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe. And like I said, I went the year before when it was in Portland, because it's always the same time of year, like Memorial Day. It always starts on Memorial Day and ends like in that first week of.
Well, I remember you coming back and we talked about it, and you met some pretty interesting people. And you learned some really deep talk a little, and also you're an educator with
I haven't really gotten into the educating part, you know, at Portland Community College. But
about what you know hands-on experience, because you work with, so you experience racism on a regular basis in and out of the classroom, and you know, and then in the community. And so, yeah, what kind of things have you learned, and what do you feel is part of the solution that we're trying to go through?
Flexibility in your thinking is one of the things that I've really learned, not just from NCOR, but just from the years of teaching, is learning how to be flexible, realizing that all one size doesn't fit all. But what can help one, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble putting into words, but just that, I guess the point about equity, right? Because people talk about equality, like we should have equal rights, but we also need equity. There's certain, like, for example, a student that has mobility issues. So you have to look at, all right, how do we, are there ramps? Are there elevators? Do we have a table that is easy enough for that student to use. I'm sorry, I'm having.
I think what what kind of makes you an expert at it, and anybody that teaches English as a second language. First, it's like when you and I did a broadcast last month, and it's archived, so people can go to that and listen to that in order to find out what the heck we're talking about here. But I know that you talked about, for instance, right now, yet another war in the United States, the Israelis and the Palestinians. Yeah. And yet in your classroom, you'll have, and I know I taught English second language in Europe, and mm-hmm. I was talking about that too, that we will have warring,
warring
people in our classroom that are absolutely friends. They overcome this whole racism thing because their countries are warring and they don't want any part of it. They escaped it. So what have you learned about that? Because that's a real demonstration of how we can just knock it off with the prejudice stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I can have a really very recent example because we just finished our first week of winter term. So started new classes at PCC. And I have one student that's from Russia and I have two students from Ukraine. Speaking of warring countries, right? We have these two students from Ukraine, one student from Russia. They're not at each other's throats. You know, there's that, I think what it is that they're in the class for a common purpose, right? They've come to the United States. They have many different reasons why they're taking classes at PCC to learn English. Some of them want to go on to further their education. Others just so that they can communicate and, you know, maybe communicate with their child's teacher. There's so many different reasons, but I think that's what it is, that they're realizing that they're in this together. Because the way a lot of our classes are is they have to work together. They have to work in groups. And, you know, I don't even really see it as like we're forcing them, right? When I say have to work together, but they want to. They want to improve themselves. And yeah, so this term I think there's at least 10 different language backgrounds in my class.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, I've just had the first week of class, so I don't have like the total numbers or anything, but yeah, we have Spanish speaking people. We have people that speak Cantonese, Vietnamese. We have students that are, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember where all they're from, but yeah, Ukraine, Russia, many different countries, Muslims that are in my class. And again, we're not seeing that in the classroom. The students, they just want to work together. And I think some of it is because they're in an education environment, right? They're there to learn together. And I feel like that's, like I know I talked about this last time, that it's getting to know people. A lot of times we're afraid of what we don't know. But these,
and I'm thinking I really love what you have a master's in this, and I love the English second language whole programs because it creates within the school system, and since education is a primary way to eliminate prejudice and bring justice to it, is you're providing a safe place so that everybody can practice unity of the human race and learn about diversity without feeling judged.
Right.
So there's a hands-on, there it is. I mean, that's, and what you're doing in the classroom, we can pull out and do in the community, and then we can pull out and do in the country, and then we can pull out and do in the world itself. So
that just had me thinking that it does develop a community. That's what happens, right? With a lot of these students, is they don't just see each other in class. That a lot of times they get involved with other, there's like an ESOL club that students join where it's not a class, it's just where they do social activities together, getting to know each other. There's the ESOL club has this conversation time. It's similar to a program I did called Conversation Cafe. I'm not gonna go into that because that discontinued. But the ESOL club has a thing that meets every week called Conversation Time, where they they serve snacks and they have an hour and there's different topics that they talk about. And what's really great about it is it's not a test. There's not attendance. It's just a place to be with other people that want to improve their conversational skills in English. And they end up doing other things together. You find out about this. You find out that they become really good friends and you hear people, hey, let's go to a movie together. Do you see where this does get out into the community?
Yeah, exactly.
It starts out in the classroom and then it goes out into the community.
Yeah. I have a personal story. I was way back when I was in the 40s. I was born in 43, so we're talking 50s and 60s. And when I was, I got in high school education. I went on, I married a guy and went to Dayton, Ohio, and he died. And I became a photographer for Olin Mills Studio, which was an old studio.
Wow.
I don't know if it's still in.
I remember that company. Wow.
Well, I was a photographer for a long time, and there was a really cool guy. He was a black guy. He may be alive, so I don't know about was, but a black guy by the name of Kenny. And we actually fell in love. He was one of my assistants because I was a photographer and he was doing help with the cameras and everything. And we actually fell in love. But because it was the 50s in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about it. We talked about maybe getting married, and there was just, we decided, and this is really sad when you think about it.
It is.
I could have been a husband, and this would have been a beautiful time for me to marry this man. And I had a baby, and he loved my child, Jeannie. And there was a perfect situation where I would have been able, without prejudice and racism in this country, racism prevented me from marrying a man I loved. And when we both talked about this, we realized that we just didn't want to wake up every day with a damn burning cross on our lawn.
Mm.
Just couldn't handle it emotionally.
It kept us from
being married. Now that's the depth of racism in this country. What in the heck is that? What is wrong?
That's tragic. But you know, when we were talking about at the beginning about how destabilizing it is, that's tragic, because here it was two people that love each other. That's all that should matter, that it's two people who love each other. But unfortunately, with the prejudice, with the unjust laws of the country, that it stopped. It stopped. That's tragic. It stopped a beautiful relationship.
And so there's a justice issue to this. So I don't get why anybody would look at anybody. And I know you're the same way, but I think we're lucky because because I'm Native American, that probably helps. But the point is, I don't look at anybody and say, God, I hate that person because the color of their skin.
Yeah. It's ludicrous. Like, what do you know about this person? You know, that's the. Do you know? You know, when you hear people say, and I'm like I said, and part of the reason I'm not going to say specifics, I'm tired of hearing these specific. You know, when people say I hate X group, right? It really doesn't matter what group they say. I hate X group, and so many times when you ask that person, do you know anybody from X group? Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
So what? You don't. I mean. You know, my question is not so what, it's what? how is that when you don't even know anything about that person?
Well, and so I come from a family of, my mother was actually from, and I just learned this recently, from she came from Lithuania into Scandinavia, and she was Jewish. I didn't know that until just recently. So I guess I'm Jewish on top of being Native American. Combine those two and see what happens. And you know, that's why I am who I am. And but the point is, in my immediate family, we were taught to be racist.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe people in this country, white people and black people for that matter, if we're looking at just black and white, we're taught to be racist to each other, and that's hate, and that produces the violence and the aggression and the tragedy and the
that's exactly the thing that we have got to go through. We have got, that's why, you know, when I said earlier, it really isn't even accurate to go, oh no, I'm not racist. Well, actually, we've all been programmed to be racist. We have to deprogram it. We have to look at, like that example I gave earlier when I had did that stumbling comment to that woman from Colombia. I had to realize, oh yeah, I was, you know, speaking from a place of white privilege without even realizing it. And that's the thing that we have to deprogram. And I think this is the thing that's really uncomfortable. It's so easy to go, oh, look at that person, they did that racist thing. It's a lot harder to look at yourself and go, oh.
Oops, I'm more racist than I thought I was. Uh-huh.
And instead of being defensive or angry or fearful, learn from it. Learn from it. Learn. How can you do better? How can you learn how to get to know someone and get past some of those ideas that you might have? And a lot of times we don't even realize how conditioned we are. What they omit from history classes, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of, I mean, I'm not saying that's the only thing, but that's part of the issue. Part of the issue is that we really don't know our real history. I mean, we hear kind of a whitewashed, literally, and I mean whitewashed version of it. I also like how you pointed out that Black people can be racist towards their own kind. That's in that book, How to Be an Anti-Racist by Dr. Ibram Kendi. He talks about this. He talks about not only is there white people with their prejudice against Black people and other people of color, there's also within the Black community and with other communities of color, racism against their own kind. And I think, again, this is where it goes back to education. We need to educate ourselves. So I think it's two things. It's education, which is mind stuff, but it's also your heart. But I think they both have to work together, right? It's not enough just to say, I love all people. I mean, that's great. That's great if you love all people and you want to, like, I also have trouble understanding not liking a person just because of the color of their skin or because of their religion or whatever reason. I also have trouble understanding that. And, you know, but that's great. That's great that we have our heart, our empathy and compassion. But this is actually where we do need some of the mind as well. We need to start learning about our real history to learn why things are the way they are still today. You know, it's like it's been better, right? You know, that's the thing, like we've made progress, but we haven't gotten to a place of race unity yet. We're far from that. I mean, we've come, you know what I mean? It's
like, oh gosh, a long progress. Way from Kenny and I in Ohio in the 50s to 2024, way, way far. But
we still got a ways to go. We still got quite a ways to go.
It starts with the individual, doesn't it? It's individual.
Yeah.
You know, waking up and you know you're an individual. And in my case, I have certain ethnic and cultural backgrounds and whatever. And I have sort of a soft brown, high cheekbone look to me. So people don't look at me and go, oh, Native American. So, but when I had very dark black hair that I was identified as Native American, and I've experienced racism on that. Because anyway, so I look out as an individual, and I know you look out as an individual. And so there is fear of the unknown, fear of what we don't know. And the justice in this is we're not taught anything. We're not taught history because history's been left out. And until recently, history is starting to be added. What in the educational area is going on there, because in my day, there was nothing in any books in the history classes about, you know, bringing Black people over from Africa, or what even happened to the Native Americans. And I sit there owning that information, and that was never taught. It was taught, the classes were all taught to white people how to be better white people and how to get richer and again
And then there was also the attitude of, oh, well, you know, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Yay, that's over. Right, that's a good thing. Or Martin Luther King had a dream. Yay, that's over. So job done, finished, right?
It's shallow approach, yeah. So what is going on in the educational area today?
That's definitely changed. And again, I don't want to vilify teachers. I think it's, you know, and they wouldn't necessarily say it that directly, but that was the message I got from my history classes, but it's almost like they just didn't want to go forward. But what's happening now is that they are changing their curriculum. I'm going to say a word that has some controversy, but I feel like it's a good thing: decolonizing the curriculum. Decolonizing the curriculum. That means looking at who are you sharing stories about with your students? I can give the example of when I taught the Thanksgiving lesson to my students. I did not teach them the pilgrims and the Indians having this happy meal together. I shared a something that was written by, from a Native American point of view. It was written by a few different Native Americans that that got together to look at, well, here's what we think really happened. No one knows exactly what happened in that history. But you see what I mean? This is an example of changing how we teach it. Also centering on voices from people that are from those different backgrounds. So if it's something about the Native American history, really showing from their point of view, or sharing stories from Black people, or sharing stories from Mexican people, or the example. So that's what's happening in history, and they are starting to look at, we need to start sharing what really happened instead of this. It's almost like the sanitized view of, let's just make it seem so nice. We have to look at the ugliness of our history if we are going to move forward to make things better.
Well, and and that's the justice of it. And if you look at our political arena,
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes.
And we have people that want to undo. They want to ban books about.
And are banning books. Banning
and
books.
They are, yes. They want to ban books, and they are banning books.
Banning books in 2024. That's what gets me, coming from 1943. I mean, I'm 80. And here's the deal. I at my age, I thought, when I was in my 30s and 40s, I thought, by the time I'm 80, who'd have thought? And now we're, I mean, the prejudice issues go to, what is this thing with, and this is a whole nother subject, I know, but there's a certain prejudice, there's a certain top-down racism.
Oh, yeah.
This is sexism at its worst. Banning abortion for women. Men in top positions are now telling women,
controlling
politics. My God, I couldn't believe 2024 when that started to break in our news. Yeah. I went, oh my God, where are we? What have we slid back into?
Well, yeah, that whole undoing of Roe v. Wade. I mean, Roe v. Wade had a 50-year run.
And it's my body. You don't get to tell
right?
me.
Right, and it's not about saving babies. It's about controlling women's bodies. And getting back to the topic that we're on, this whole banning books, it goes back to fear again. People are so afraid. One of the things I hear is, well, if we learn what really happened to the Native Americans, if we learn what really happened to the Black people, then we're going to find out we're just all awful. And then they're just going to hate us. And the children are going to hate themselves. And they're going to hate the United States. It's all fear, fear, fear. Oh my God, they're going to be afraid. Instead of, they can learn, wow, we don't want to do this anymore. We need to stop this. We need to realize that we're in this together. I highly recommend a book called The Sum of Us by Heather McGee, because it's all about how racism hurts all of us and we could be prospering together. And she talks about from labor unions to climate change to runaway capitalism. She talks about so many examples of how we could prosper together if we could just get past all of the silly, well, not silly, dangerous laws, like
very, very
banning books. That's a dangerous law, because what it's doing, you're trying to create more people who don't know our real history, don't understand, and learn those prejudice behavior. Because like we were saying earlier, that people aren't born racist. People are not born with prejudice, but they're taught. And they're taught it from a very young age.
I want to quote something from, again, this book comes out of England, but it's a Baha'i publication. And this is a quote from the Baha'i writings. "The best beloved of all things in my sight is justice. The purpose of justice is the appearance of unity amongst men." And I'm thinking, without oneness and unity of the human race, there's only one race, the human race.
Yeah.
You know, that's science. There's only one race, the human race. And skin color is whatever. There are lots of scientific explanations about that too. But there's only one race, the human race. And without unity, which justice right now is going to have to bring in, without unity and oneness, there will be no climate change. There will be no... So what are we doing? We're looking at our future generations. What are we doing to our children? This is all about handing something off to our future, for our children. Mm-hmm. If we care about our children, we better start changing this in any way we can. And I really love all the religions and the movements that are addressing this. There are many movements that are addressing unity and justice and race unity and so on, because it's all colors, all one human race coming together to stop the hate and the prejudice and the anything that's bringing us all down. Damaging our children. I mean, it's not just there's nothing shallow about this. This is
there isn't. It's every system that you can think of. There's not one system that's not been touched by racism that's creating the disunity that we have, like the hate crimes against each other. I think this is where we have what I'm seeing, and I'm, again, I know there's probably exceptions, but many people of younger generations, to reveal, I'm 52 years old. They call me Gen X. But there's younger generations, millennials, Gen Z, these younger generation, I'm seeing bigger and bigger groups of people really caring about moving forward, again, showing that empathy and compassion and getting to know each other no matter what their background is. And I'm seeing this growing movement because they want a planet to survive on. To survive on this planet, we have to work together. To work together, we have to get past this racism and prejudice of each other.
Yeah, and this is just a tiny... Now that the telescope has gone out there and shown us... unendable. I mean, it's just like, oh my God, I go on Zoom and I look at all the for each fixed sun, there's a planet with creatures on it. I'm assuming, I think it's true. So I'm thinking about the qualities it takes. So I'm thinking about genuine love, extreme patience, humility, true humility, consumeration, tactful consumeration, initiatives that are sound, wisdom that is mature.
Yes.
and deliberate persistence and prayerful effort for people who are meditative and prayerful. It takes all of these virtues and genuine. So that's within education, because educators educate about that. And those are the positive aspects. So again, going back to your classroom and going back to, I know you take your, we're friends, you know, and you regard, you say, I'm your second mom. I love it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely.
But I feel very, I just feel incredibly, just overwhelmed with love and all of that to know you. And there's a, I'd say I had, I don't know if I wrote this. I don't think I did. I don't have the person that wrote it, but it might've been me, cause I'm a writer. So I'm going to hug you so tight that all your broken pieces will come together.
Ooh, I like that.
Isn't that a neat statement?
Yeah, that is.
I'll look that up to see who wrote that. I might have written that, because I do write stuff like that. But I'm going to hug you so tight. And isn't that what we're trying to do, is hug each other so tight that all our broken pieces come together? Because we are so broken, all of us. The whole world is...
Yeah, they are. I feel like even in my answers, right, they're not... It's because it's such... I mean, I don't want to focus on the problem. I do believe there is a solution, but I also believe I'm not going to see it fully solved in my lifetime, because it's such a, there's so many, there's just so many pieces to it. Like, because we're broken, right? There's so many pieces that are broken, but I think it's picking up those pieces, putting them together and persisting and never giving up on it. Yeah. Never giving up on it. Never going, oh, well, this is just bigger than me. Yeah, it is bigger than me. But if we all work on this together, and if we could all dedicate ourselves to looking at how we treat other people, how we think about other people, and really analyzing, it does mean coming undone. You do have to come undone before you can really start working on, okay, well, I have these thoughts growing up, but I want to turn it around and be like, no, we don't have to be in this place. And we need to really work together. We need to see how we need each other if we're going to solve all of the problems. There's just so many problems, but big ones, climate change. We're not going to even have a planet to live on if we don't work together on this, right?
The power of unity, the power of unity and oneness is, that's not just a nice, I mean, it's so easy to sit around and make beautiful little language and say beautiful little quotes like, oh, unity and oneness is beautiful and we should all come together. Hey, do it. This is one of the most important things to understand and to get behind and get into action and get messy and get you know, dirt up your elbows, because we got to work together. And that's bottoming out and coming apart. And then
wherever your expertise is, like I'm an educator, right? Look at how we can, for example, so it's not just my classroom, but how accessible, how welcoming is Portland Community College? Oh. And we are constantly working on how do we make that admissions process easier so they feel welcome? How do we provide student services so they feel supported and helped? You know, it's not like, all right, you're admitted to class, good luck, right? I mean, if they need tutoring, they need to be able to reach us to find out, or if they are, you know, stuck on, oh, I don't know what class I should take next term. We need to have these services where everyone feels welcome, where they don't just feel like, oh, well, I don't feel very welcome here because they weren't patient with me because my English isn't that good, for example, or I don't quite understand the cultural norms of this country, although I hate the word cultural norm, but you know what I mean? Like, there's just a lot of things where we have to provide support so that a student really feels like oh, I'm welcome here. I belong here, no matter what my background is. And we, as educators, whether we're academic professionals or faculty or staff, we are constantly working on how do we help all the students from all walks of life feel like they belong in this college and feel like they can succeed. And if they're having struggles, who can they turn to help, whether it's counseling services, if they need that, for example.
Mm-hmm. I know when I had to learn, I taught English second language while I was learning Norwegian, Swedish, Finnish, and Russian.
Oh. Go on. A lot of language.
I was invited by the Red Cross and other entities to go and work with alcohol and drug. I have a master's in conflict resolution.
Oh, that's incredible.
It's a bachelor's in theater. I know you and I have done some of that. Theater is a tool for conflict resolution.
Right.
I'm really impressed. Anyway, I work with the Samis. I work with the different people in those different countries, not knowing the language when I first got there. And so I understand the feeling of the lack of security, the lack of understanding the culture, understanding the language. And while I was invited and cherished and utilized and paid to go all over the teaching, you know, sharing the Hopi prophecy or the Native American culture with all of these people,
and connected
to the Samis, I understand how isolating that is. And so I really understand it from that perspective while I was teaching English as a second language.
It just reminded me of something when you were talking about your experience and all the resources. I forgot, we also have food pantry at every campus. So if people are struggling with hunger, we have food pantry that the community can donate to, the faculty, academic professionals can donate to this. So again, you see what I mean? Like that, this is what justice looks like. It's finding out all those needs, because I think earlier we talked about poverty, right? Because of prejudice, we have groups of people that have been kept in poverty, which again brings me back to that Some of Us book by Heather McGee. She goes into that whole history. And what I love about this book is that she goes into the real solutions that it's the zero sum game about, oh, if we give rights to all these people, then it's going to take something away from me. That's a zero sum game. It's an erroneous, false way of thinking. It's what they call an austerity mindset. That we feel like you're lacking all the time. Instead of seeing how really, no, we're not, we're creating these lack of, like she gives the example of how they drained a community pools. They drained community pools because they didn't want Black people swimming in the same pools as white people. So they paved over these community pools. So everyone lost access to a free community pool, right? For example, and then she goes into like the history of the housing and what we did there to discriminate against certain groups of people to make it hard for them to have housing. So if you're putting people in poverty, see, this all comes from this prejudice, this racism. So if we can move forward and move toward justice, helping people that need help, stop looking at the scarcity, that's the word I'm looking for, stop thinking from that scarcity mindset.
Yes.
Because
that's
a mistake in your thinking, and that's a fear-based thinking.
Oh, good Lord. And what it produces, the violence and the alcoholism and the substance abuse and the aggression and the all abuses.
You brought up alcoholism. That reminds me, Larry Wiltmore, he is a comedian. He's a Black man. He's a comedian. But he made this joke, but he was serious. He said the United States with their racism is like the alcoholic. I don't have a problem. And he's, you know, growing up, because he's really, I mean, I know it's a gross example, but he's saying, but that's what this country is like. Like, I don't have a problem, even though there is this problem. And that's his point, is that is the first step, is to go, oh, yes, this is a racist country that's steeped in white supremacy, but it doesn't have to stay this way. I'm going to quote somebody else, Isabel Wilkerson, for her book called Caste, The Origins of Our Discontent. She talks about how people act like racism is not my thing to fix. She goes, well, imagine if you had an old house that needs new plumbing. It needs a new foundation. You don't just go, well, I didn't fix it. I didn't build this house this way. No, you take out the old foundation. You take out the plumbing. You fix it. And that's how she was saying, that's what we could be doing in this country, is looking at, okay, we were built on this white supremacy. We were built on this racism, but we can rebuild this to something where it's a just, equitable, and fair place. So I think, again, this, it goes back to, we have to stop ignoring this problem because it's blowing up in our face.
And we are at the, you know, we are, it's we, I, again, I so love the communities, and I know youth, the
yes.
youth of today aren't having any of this.
They're not.
But we've got to start. We are doing this. You and I and a whole bunch of people like us.
There are many people out there doing it.
And I'm a horrible broadcaster for cable because I keep forgetting to break in the middle of our conversation. People are tuned in to KBOO.FM, and I'm very grateful for KBOO to be able to give me the opportunity to broadcast these shows. It's the third Wednesday of every month at 9 in the morning. We're also stream. If you go to KBOO.FM, and my show is called, what is my show called? I forgot.
Negotiating dramatic events.
And if you go to my show, all the stuff that I do is archived there. And again, the last broadcast we did was The Promise of World Peace, which ties in with the only way we're going to get world peace is by starting with what we're talking about now, community peace, through tearing down all forms of prejudice, racism, which tears down poverty, which tears down the violence and the hatred and all that. We need all of this is starting to come undone, yay. And this new world we're building, and I call it the light and love world, will manifest. There will be world peace, but we have to tear all this stuff down. So I really appreciate you, Marianne, coming on and doing part two.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah,
it was fabulous having you again and talking about this very important subject. And I'm sure that we'll find another subject to talk about. But I do this show once a month. And again, I'm very grateful to be able to do this. So what sort of ending statements? It's about 1:56 now or something like that.
So we should probably wrap up our...
wrapping it up so that, yeah.
So I think the ending statement is to never give up, even though, you know, what they say is like, even in the darkest hour, you don't know when a light will shine. Like, continue to be that light, continue to educate yourself, continue to expand your thinking, expand the people that you get to know, and get to know people. And I talked about this last time, get to know people who look different than you, get to know people who think differently than you, because we have to start learning that and just keep on working towards justice. If you see something that's happening that's a racist incident, step in and say something to be part of that. You know, again, it's not to create a conflict, but it's to step in to say, look, what are we doing? We are human beings here. We need to move forward, and we need to learn how to, I don't know, we need to learn how to really love each other, like really have this compassion. I mean, it's so easy to hate each other. Wouldn't it be nice if we could easily love each other and like have some that compassion and empathy?
Yeah. And I must say, because our children and grandchildren deserve the chance to live in a world free of
prejudice. Absolutely.
Therefore, a world that's heading.
Be persistent. That's why we have to be persistent. towards creating this better world, because our future generations, they need it.
Well, I thank you, Marianne, so much. And
thank you.
We're getting started in a new year this year. And again, thank you for coming on to KBOO and for this second interview. And thank you, Marianne.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Guest again. Bye, everybody. Tune in to KBOO. Wonderful station. Wonderful subject matter. Bye.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, January 22nd at 4:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online via a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify a meeting is being held.